So I saw her playing the violin. Amazing. She did a great job. She was really good.
She did. Jane was, I actually have all of Jane's yearbooks, not her actual copies, but from the high school she went to. Jane was actually first chair starting in her sophomore year at her high school for the violin. She could also play the piano and the viola. And Jane always said that if she hadn't become a movie star, that she would have done. Sorry, I went by my window and the truck went by. Jane always said that if she hadn't become a movie star, that she would have pursued her musical talents.
And she could have. I was surprised to see how good she was. She was so good. Oh, what a cute little family. Jane Marie was very cute. The little boy was adorable. Oh, my God, the little angel face. And that little family, she was like a little lady, Jane Marie. And in your book, they were all talking about Miklos. Is that? No, Mickey Jr. Miklos. Uh-huh. That's him. So Jane was, you know, Jane and Mickey were in with the new baby and they're taking pictures. And then someone went in the back room and Jane Marie was there. And she said, I'm not jealous because they're not taking my picture. Something like that, right? That she, very mature for her age, you know, it's like, wow, kid.
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, Jane Marie was Jane's shadow basically growing up. Even when Jane Marie was a little bit older, she would do Jane's hair and makeup before she would go out on stage.
So they were like BFFs, really good girlfriends.
Yes. No, they were absolutely the best of friends, you know, and Jane always made sure that she could take Jane Marie with her.
Yeah. She had her newborn there. And it said 1958 had been a year of exceptional highs for the couple. Jane and Mickey had been married, performed in Las Vegas, attended Con. Jane had filmed a movie. Jane had filmed the movie and the couple welcomed their first child. So it was a lovely year for them. Mm-hmm. And they look very, very happy. Now we come to 1959.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about what was going on. The sheriff of Fractured Jaw.
So the Sheriff of Fractured Jaw was released. It didn't do very well over here, but it did really well in England and the rest of Europe. And that really becomes the nail in Jane's coffin, because the movie did, you know, very well, especially being it was considered more of a low budget film.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, Some Like It Hot came out and that just blew everybody away. Some Like It Hot made millions in the box office. It re-solidified Marilyn as, like, you know, the dumb blonde of Fox, and Jane's career really suffered because of it. Okay, are we good?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, Some Like It Hot really solidifies, you know, Marilyn again as the dumb blonde of Fox, and Jane's career, you know, really suffers because of it. You know, when Jane was signed, Marilyn was proclaiming that she wasn't going to do any more dumb blonde roles. And Jane was looked at as, you know, the replacement for that. And Jane really relished in being a sex symbol, unlike Marilyn. And, you know, Some Like It Hot, like I said, it brings Marilyn back to the forefront of playing these dumb blondes. And she may, you know, the movie makes millions, because it is a classic comedy. And Jane, you know, gets put on the back burner and Fox starts loaning her out. But people tend to not know that even, you know, though Jane wasn't making A-list features with Fox, Fox was still able to loan her out for between $100,000 and $200,000 a picture.
That's nothing to sneeze at. So she was still wanted somewhere. You know, did you, I didn't get that picture in your book, but have you ever seen the picture of Jane standing, Marilyn Monroe is sitting down talking to someone and Jane is standing looking down at Marilyn, and did you ever see that pic?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's in my book.
Is it?
Yeah, it's in the 1955 section. It's the last picture that I put in there. It's at,
maybe that's where I saw it. Yeah, and she doesn't look at, right? Marilyn doesn't look at her. We don't know from that still photo, but I can't imagine Marilyn being thrilled to talk to her or anything.
Well, putting the, you know, will success, because supposedly there's differing accounts, but the most common one that I see is that Marilyn actually did go to a performance of Will Success, Will Rock Hunter, the Broadway play, and thoroughly enjoyed it. But you have to remember, too, that Jane is 7 years younger than Marilyn. She's bustier. She's blonder. She's just, you know, kind of like a caricature of Marilyn, but she's still her own person. But Jane's, you know, embracing like this sex star persona, and that's just not Marilyn. But of course, with Jane being like that, she's going to take parts that Marilyn would have been considered for before Jane came on the scene.
Yeah. Yeah, because she was studying, Marilyn was studying at the Actors Studio, and that's when she became with Lee Strasberg, and then Lee's wife became her new acting coach. That must have drove people nuts. So then Mickey and Jane go to Brazil to Carnival, and she had a dainty pink dress on, and somebody tugged at it, and it fell off. This was like a brouhaha, right? This big, like, massive crowd.
Jane's clothes were ripped off. She had been wearing a diamond garter, and it was stolen. One of her earrings was ripped out. Jane had quite an interesting time. That was in February of 1959. They looked at it as a second honeymoon for the couple, Mickey and Jane. And they went down there. Jane was an absolute hit. She caused a 3-car pile up when she walked across the street in a bikini. But a lot of newspapers ran with that story, and, you know, they blamed Jane for getting her clothes ripped off. Although one does have a Brazilian reporter who was there and admitted that he had been pinching and prodding at Jane, and he got a part of her dress.
That's so gross. Can you imagine? You know, you're in this crowd that's just like picking you apart, picking off your clothes, picking off your garter, and picking off everything. She wouldn't have wanted that. She was in this huge crowd. I can't imagine why people would give her bad press. I'd say Jane, it says Jane was thrifty. She was, but not unlike she would get mink coats, things like that, right? But for other things, she even got trading stamps. You say.
Jane was very frugal. And Jane Marie talks about this in a couple documentaries that she's done on her mom. Jane was very frugal from the standpoint of if it was an intangible item, she didn't really want to pay for it. She was a good tipper, though.
Well, that's
she
good.
She would tip. There were a couple people who came out to the press in the 60s and admitted that she was an excellent tipper. But she didn't want to have to pay for meals. She didn't want to have to, you know, pay for, like, her travel expenses or anything like that. But then she would go and buy a $30,000 Italian crystal chandelier.
Yeah. Well, in one of the interviews she did or whatever, you said, oh, he's holding up the cute little baby, that she didn't think of food, and she didn't think of food as, like, a necessity.
No, she would go and she would, she didn't think that she had to pay for her meals and, you know, groceries. She would try to make deals with grocers that she would sign things for a few hours if they would give her, you know, a week's worth of groceries.
Wow. Boy, that's cheap, I have to say. You know, come on, Jane. You know, I'm glad she was a good tipper, but eek. I just can't imagine that, that always doing that. Oh, that's so cute. These baby pictures. Miklo, he was a big baby.
Jane. He was a big baby. Jane was a big baby too, though. She weighed 9 pounds, 10 ounces when she was born. And then Mariska, which of course everyone knows who Mariska
love
is.
Love her.
Law and Order SVU. Mariska weighed over 9 pounds when she was born too.
She was a big girl. So mm-hmm. On December 17th, Jane returned to Hollywood after being away for 5 months, that she had a wonderful time. She did the Bob Hope Christmas tour, arriving mm-hmm. in Alaska. Her parents took care of Miklos and Jane Marie.
Mm-hmm.
And so 1959 was a good year for Jane, right?
It was. You know, Jane couldn't have known what was going to happen. She, you know, filmed Too Hot to Handle in The Challenge. That's why she was away for 5 months. But, you know, they were still semi-decent, you know, pictures. Too Hot to Handle was filmed in color, although the American version would eventually be stripped so that they could censor Jane's breasts.
Poor Jane.
But no, it was a good year. She still went out on a high note in 59. And, of course, people just fell all over her when they saw her, you know, doing the Bob Hope tour.
I'm sure. Did she do those squeals? Did she ever say, I saw this, I think it was on YouTube, that Lonnie Anderson played Jane. Mm-hmm. Did Jane say Davoon?
Jane would say Davoon. She actually says it in a more successful rock cover. All of a sudden, she just says, oh, that's just Davoon.
That's and, a riot.
Jane's squeals were a trademark.
Yeah, and Davoon. I'll have to say Davoon. I like that.
Davoon.
So we now go into her 60s. Your book ends 59. So you don't go into her downfall in the book. But it's a great book. It takes you through her career, so much stuff that we didn't even get into. But and beautiful, beautiful photos. You did a great job, and I loved it.
Oh, thank you.
But then when I get to 1960, I'm like, where's 1960? What happened?
So my next book, I thought of putting them together, but of course, I have to back up. There's not a whole lot of places that wanted to do anything about Jane. If they did want to do something about Jane, they want to be really, like, salacious. So I ended up having to do this book myself. So just to keep the price point down, I split from 1933 to 59. And then my next book that's coming out actually in June of this year is 1960 to 1967 and beyond.
Oh, goody. I can't wait to read it. Yeah, you know, they want all that, the dirt, but, you know, we do have to talk about some of the dirt. Okay, so she and Mickey are still together, and they have how many more children? Just one more?
Let's see. They're at Zoltan in 1960, because he's born August of that year.
And then they have?
So, they from Zoltan, they have Mariska, but they don't have Mariska until 1964, and she's born on January 23rd, 1964.
They were having problems then, though, right? Jane was having affairs and things like that.
They were. So they really, 60 through 61, I mean, it's pretty smooth sailing for the couple. 62, though, is a monumental year for them. They get in a boating accident.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Jane, Mickey, and newspaper man who was with them get stranded on a desert island for overnight. Jane's finally rescued, and she is suffering, you know, like horrible sun rash, and she's covered in like mosquito and sand flea bites, and she's treated for exhaustion. This is down in the Bahamas. A lot of people thought that Jane was dead.
And also, so didn't a lot of people think it was just publicity? I saw the pictures. Publicity there.
There's definitely no publicity. Jane actually did not really like to talk about the accident. And when she would talk about it, she would always just say, you know, it's because of the grace of God I'm alive.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, would quickly change the topic. That's one thing that definitely was not a publicity stunt like some people have wanted to claim. Mickey actually addressed those rumors because they started pretty much as soon as they were found.
That's awful. Just looking at her. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. She's all sunburnt. She's, she doesn't look good. Mickey looks exhausted. But yeah, what had happened was they had been water skiing, and supposedly Jane thought she saw a shark. Sometimes it's the newspaper man that was with them saw a shark. It just changes kind of with each telling. But at some point, someone thought they saw a shark. Jane panics. She went under. Mickey dived into the water to rescue Jane. Obviously, he did. The boat capsized, and they had to go and, you know, swim to shore. And they went on this itty-bitty little island that was actually off of a reef. And they got rescued the next day. And like you said, I mean, you can tell Jane's not acting. I mean, she was so happy to be reunited with her children.
And you see her face, you know, her lips are swollen. There's no publicity stuff there. That she was definitely through a very traumatic thing. So that, we're at 1962, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she and Mickey now, she's, you know, I don't know, feeling her oats. She wants to go out, and she does. She starts going out with other men, having affairs with other men. And Mickey basically stays home with the kiddies. And then they do. What was 63? What was the movie? She was an actress who starred, and she was naked, right? In a regular movie.
Yes. So, Jane got dropped in July of 62. And Jane actually was, you know, supposedly very happy about it. Like you said, she went out with a guy named Enrique Obamba. It is worth noting, when Jane would go with people, and I'm not condoning her cheating, obviously, but when Jane would go with people, she very much was with that person. And so she only really went with Enrique Obamba in 62. She realizes that Christmas that she can't stand to be away from Mickey and her kids. They get back together. And then early 63, she signs the deal to make Promises, Promises, which starred Tommy Noonan, who is probably best known as playing Gus in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes with Marilyn in 1953. And she does a Playboy spread, and it's a huge thing. Jane was actually the first American star to appear nude on film in a mainstream picture after the Hays Code had been implemented.
But they did show her? Or was it just like a little, you know, like a silhouette or something like that?
No. You see full on, you know, from like the belly button up nudie. And you also do see her bum in it. And she's rolling around in bed and she's taking a bath. I actually just watched that movie last night.
What'd you think?
They're pretty tasteful nude shots. Nothing like what you would see today. Obviously, you don't see anything with her pubic region or anything down there. But they're actually pretty tasteful shots, but they're inserted kind of randomly. I mean, Noonan was the producer of that movie, and he really milked it for everything it was worth.
Yeah.
Mamie Van Doren was originally supposed to star in it. And she dropped out. And yeah, so then, you know, Jane was sitting there doing it, and they signed on Marie McDonald, who had formerly been known as The Body. They got the movie made pretty quickly, and you know, no issue of Playboy has ever surpassed issues sold as the Jane Playboy.
Wow. I thought Marilyn was the numero uno.
No, Marilyn was the first cover girl, but Jane's issue of Playboy sold over 3 million copies, and they never had an issue before or since that surpassed that.
Wow. Wow. Was she nude in those, or was it just like tastefully covered here, there, and everywhere?
Oh, no, she's definitely nude in them. What it was, a photographer agreed to go behind the scenes and take pictures of Jane. And, you know, Jane agreed to do it. There, Jane said she did it for free. Playboy would claim that they paid her for the shoot. Obviously, I don't have access to Playboy's archives. Don't know exactly what happened there. But regardless, it got the movie a ton of publicity. And that is also the only issue of Playboy that landed Hugh Hefner in jail.
Really? Why?
He was charged for obscenity charges. So he had to go, and he was arrested by the Chicago police.
Because of Jane?
Because of Jane.
That is so bizarre. Oh, my God. I never knew that.
Yeah, no, it was a very popular issue. Everyone in the nation was talking about it. It put Jane on the map all over again.
And this was 63?
Mm-hmm.
And she was still with Mickey and the kids. And so then mm-hmm. she got pregnant again.
She did. She got pregnant, and then she announced that she was with a man named Nelson Sardelli. There are people who think that Nelson is actually Mariska's father. I'm really not part of that camp.
I don't. I think she looks like both her mother and father.
Goodness. Sorry. Yes. No, I agree with you. She definitely, and especially her son, looks a lot like Mickey. But anyway, so they, you know, she separated from Mickey again. She mm-hmm. actually got divorced from Mickey in Juarez, Mexico. And then she announced she was pregnant, or supposedly found out she was pregnant. She had to have known that she was already pregnant when she filed for the divorce.
Definitely.
But she files for the divorce, says she's going to marry Nelson Sardelli. Sardelli reportedly did not want to risk raising a child that was not his own. And so Jane went back with Mickey, and they welcomed Mariska in January of 64.
And then soon after, they got divorced.
They did. So soon after, she started working on a play called Bus Stop.
That was Marilyn's film, right?
Yes, Marilyn mm-hmm. had done the first film version, Marilyn had done the film version of Bus Stop, but it was originally a Broadway play, but Jane went in Summerstock on it, and she fell in love with her director, who was a man named Matt Sember. And Jane came out and she said, oh, the divorce I got in 1963 from Mickey actually was valid. And the California courts ruled in her favor.
Now they can't get along. She's drinking. I think she's substance abuse as well at this time.
There are rumors that she was dropping acid.
Oh my.
I haven't found anything to support that. I'll just say if it happened, I wouldn't be shocked. And if it didn't happen, I also wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
But in 1964, she meets the Beatles. They came to America for the first time. And Paul McCartney said, if they could meet one person, they'd want to meet Jane Mansfield. And so she goes out with the Beatles. There's a story that came out a few years ago saying that John Lennon peed in her drink and gave it to her. There's nothing to support that. The person who claimed the story, there's no evidence that he was actually present.
I heard that story.
Yeah, no, it's popular in the Jane community, but I rest assured there's nothing to support it.
Good.
She meets the Beatles. Supposedly the night doesn't go so well. They're expecting, 1957 Jane, and they meet 1964 Jane.
Who's, lived. By no means is she old. What is she, like 31?
Mm-hmm.
But she's lived life, and she's drinking, and her looks are different, obviously.
Exactly, and she had just given birth 7 months before she meets them.
Yeah.
And she actually had been performing in a Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, where she played Lorelei.
Mm-hmm.
She'd actually been performing down there in Anaheim, and she came up to meet them. Paul would later make derogatory comments about her in Playboy, which he has since admitted he probably shouldn't have done.
Good.
But, they were young. They were expecting, this really, curvaceous sex symbol who, yeah, she was a mother, but she only had one kid, not someone who had had a, you know, baby 7 months before.
Right.
And had driven up, you know, an hour and a half to see them.
That must have been tough for her.
Oh, most definitely. I think she was very surprised to, you know, like, face that kind of backlash from them, especially being, you know, The Girl Can't Help It had been a huge influence for Paul and John. And Paul played a song from The Girl Can't Help It. They both love the movie. And that's how Paul joined on and, you know, to the band that eventually would become the Beatles.
Wow. That's a big scoop. I never heard that.
Oh, yeah. No, he, Paul talks about it in one of the Beatles documentaries that they did about how they were just huge fans of her and, you know, they absolutely adored her. Paul actually didn't go out that night with them. So it was a little shocking that he was the one to make a derogatory comment about her to Playboy a few months later. But Ringo actually did stick up for Jane and said, you know, so says Paul, king of the Beatles.
Well, that's nice because, well, he was in one of the movies. I read something. Was she actually asked to be Ginger Grant in Gilligan's Island?
She was offered the part, but the thing is, TV didn't pay that well.
Yeah, it was awful. I think they got like 150 a week or 200 a week. Really?
Yeah, Little Players definitely got that. Jane probably would have been offered somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's about what the cast was bringing home in season 3 of the show, which of course ended up being the last season. Mm-hmm. But Jane could not support herself on a salary like that. She wanted to keep the pink palace. She wanted to keep her kids in like the lifestyle they had become accustomed to. And she found that she could make a lot more money in nightclub work.
And she could. So she divorced this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And her divorce lawyer, whose name is?
Sam Brody.
He is... I read he was a divorce lawyer, low down and a dirty fighter. And he also was an alcoholic, and he and Jane would get into it. And, you know, she also bartered. She didn't have to pay for his services to get the divorce. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting yet an interesting thing for her to do. And during that time, I know this is salacious, but this is a true thing. It's been in Vanity Fair, whatever. I don't know why she did it, but she joined the Church of Satan. So did Sammy Davis Jr. I don't know if it's a groovy, wild thing to do. And she had a picture taken with Anton LaVey, who was the leader of that. And in some things, it says that they had a relationship. I don't know, but you know, you read all sorts of things. And it said that he did not like the guy she was with, and he put a curse on him. Did you? And a lot of bad things happened around Anton LaVey. Mm-hmm. He put a curse on the guy, and he said, Jane, get away from him. He only has a year more to live. And mm-hmm. then she goes out on the road and... tell us what is she doing now? Like, this is okay. Towards the end of her life. She's going to these okay. little clubs.
Mm-hmm. So, let me just say, Jane was never a Satanist. Jane actually got extremely mad when LaVey claimed that. There's a story that they met in October. Supposedly it was on like October 23rd, 1966, you know, really close to Halloween. But I have pictures of Jane, and she is very obviously in Vancouver, Canada, when she was supposedly hanging out with Anton. There's no press reports on that. There's no pictures, nothing to support that they met in October. We do know that they had some communication because in January of 1967, Jane says that she is actually looking into a bunch of different religions. She was in Vietnam visiting the troops, performing for the troops like she did almost every year. And she said she was exploring Satanism and Hinduism and Buddhism and just a bunch of religions because she was looking for the religion that fit her.
Did something happen in Vietnam? Was there some disastrous kind of thing that happened when she was performing there?
There's a story that she was sent back early, but that story actually isn't true. In fact, she stayed a few days later than she was supposed to.
These fiends.
Because the troops were so happy to see her.
Well, that's, you know, it's so good to get this because I'm reading these in books, in magazines that are supposed to be, you know, like Vanity Fair or something like that. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be legit and reported mm-hmm. on, and it's false. So thank you for clearing that up.
Oh, yeah, of course. I totally get why people do the Anton stuff. Anyway, Anton comes out a couple weeks after, you know, she admits that she's been exploring a bunch of different religions. And Anton goes, oh, well, Jane's a member of the Church of Satan. And Jane got extremely upset by that claim. You know, Jane released a statement and she said, you know, I think that Mr. LaVey is a very intelligent person, but, you know, I am somebody who loves God. And it makes sense because Jane actually was always a religious person, which looking at her, you wouldn't think that, but she was. She always took her children to church on Sundays and she had, you know, a deep love of religion and God. And, you know, LaVey and Satanism is basically just a form of atheism, which is, you know, why the curse stuff likely isn't true either, because even if they had done a curse, you know, LaVey's not going to believe in it because at the core of it, he's an atheist.
Yeah.
But in September of 1967, after she died, he came out with that story. And
oh, that's, you know, where it came from.
Yeah. So it's after she died. And, you know, he starts claiming, oh, I did this curse on Jane. But no, Jane actually had announced that she was converting to Judaism in May of 1967, a few weeks before she died.
Oh, wow. Okay, so why don't you just take us to the couple weeks before and the night she was performing in these clubs. Was she making any money at these clubs?
She was. She was making well over $1,000 a night at these clubs.
And they were kind of yucky clubs, but they were... She was at least getting paid. She had to make a living.
Right. Some of them were Gus Stevens. A lot of people think that these clubs were super seedy. Gus Stevens was actually a semi-decent club in the area of Biloxi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jane made over, you know, $1,600 or so the last night that she was there. But they were supper clubs. I mean, it wasn't like when she'd been playing at Vegas, but they weren't, you know, like trashy CD places that you wouldn't want to go at night either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But Jane performs. She ends her performance around midnight. And because her set was only about an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened was she had been asked to... Mamie Van Doren had been asked to appear on a show, and she couldn't make it. So Jane had agreed to, you know, go down there, be on the show to help promote, you know, the Gus Stevens act.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so she took it, and she wanted to go to New Orleans that night, which is about an hour and a half from Biloxi. But she wanted to go down to New Orleans that night so they could spend the night in New Orleans. And then she could appear on the show in the morning and then they could go back for her next show at Gus Stevens the following night. There is a story that there was a lot of fog from a mosquito mist. That story is not true.
Wow.
I actually have the police report. It was a very clear night. It's just they made a turn and they ran into the semi.
Was he going very – I read that the driver had very little sleep. And mm-hmm. That's what – you know, like he couldn't tell. And he was driving – was he driving very fast? The guy was driving
Jane? He was supposedly, according to the police investigation, they guessed that he was probably going around 60, 65, and the speed limit on the road was like 50.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't going, I mean, some people claim like he was going about 90 miles per hour. He wasn't going that fast.
I read 80.
Yeah. No, he wasn't going that fast, but... of course, when you hit a semi that's going like 30 miles per hour,
Lord Almighty.
It's not going out the best.
Yeah. So,
but Jane was killed instantly. And so was Sam, who was with her. He was sitting in the middle. Jane was in the passenger seat, and Ronnie Harrison was driving. Ronnie was only 19. And like you said, he only had about 2 hours of sleep that night. And he was engaged to Gus Stevens' daughter. But they hit the semi. Jane was not decapitated. The best way to describe it was, the best way to describe it would be that Jane was scalped.
Yeah.
And her skull was crushed. And so then that set off a bunch of estate drama and funeral drama, you know, pretty much as soon as she died. But it's always comforting to me to know that it was an instantaneous death.
Yes.
Not something that happened.
Also, her three children were in the mm-hmm. back seat. Mariska, I know what's his name? Starts with an M.
Oh, Mickey Jr. and Zoltan.
And Zoltan, yes. And Zoltan said that they didn't see Mariska at first because she was under the seat. And they mm-hmm. got her, and she hurt her head and whatever. But they were there, and they were safe. And it's so ironic to me that her dad died in a car accident, and she was 3 years old in the mm-hmm. back seat. You know, it's creepy. And she said, I don't know. So she was 34 years old, right?
She was. And yeah, like you said, Mickey Jr. suffered a broken arm. Zoltan was pretty, you know, banged up. And Mariska had a large laceration on her face. Mickey Sr. hired a plastic surgeon to come out and stitch up Mariska's face, but she still has the scar, and you can see it in certain shots today.
Mm-hmm. And she says she has no memory of that, which is good. Mm-hmm. Good for her. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want that memory. And so actually Mickey took over at that point, right?
Yeah. So, Jane wasn't technically divorced from Matt yet. They were still going back and forth on their custody agreements and their settlements and everything. But Mickey came down, and Louisiana recognized Mickey as her legal husband. And so he was able to take the body. Matt wanted to bury Jane in Hollywood, and Mickey said no, that they were going to bury her near her father. And that's also what Vera and Harry wanted. So Mickey took her up, and, you know, they buried her in Penn Argyle, and she has a gigantic heart-shaped headstone. In California, Matt was looked at as her legal husband still, and so then Matt, you know, went through all of the estate stuff.
He got all the money?
Yeah, well, so her estate basically got eaten up by attorney fees. Because Mickey and Matt were fighting, because Mickey looked at, well, I'm legally your husband in Louisiana, I should be your husband in California. And Matt looked at, like, no, I'm, you know, I was able to marry her, you know, back in 64. I'm her legal husband. But her estate, which estimates put at being worth around $2 million,
yeah,
was pretty much completely eaten up by attorney fees.
Wow, what a shame. And the Pink Palace, didn't Engelbert Humperdinck move there?
He did. There's a story that Cass Elliot owned it for a short time, but that's not true. It actually was purchased by a woman named Rita, and Rita had been a burlesque performer, and she purchased it in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And she sold it to Humperdinck. Ringo Starr attempted to buy the house at one point, but that sale fell through. But yeah, so Rita sold it to Humperdinck, and Humperdinck owned it up until 2002.
Wow. And wasn't there allegedly Jane was haunting there? That was a story.
Yes. Actually, Humperdinck claims that in one of the shows that he was on about the house. I actually think it's on the QVC special. Yes, he tried to sell the house on QVC.
Wow.
It was $4 million.
He saw, did he do it?
No, it didn't sell. This was back in the 90s.
Jeez, but he Engelbert. Got to give him that. Would they get a free album or something if they bought the house for $4 million bucks and skincare products from Engelbert?
No, but you did get Jane's piano and stuff. The house was supposed to be furnished.
Oh.
But anyway, no, he said that he had seen his spirit twice, had seen Jane's spirit twice. Mickey claimed at the end of, I think it's the British documentary that you're talking about, the BBC one
yes.
that came out.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about how he had seen Jane's spirit and she was playing the violin. So, yeah, supposedly Jane's spirit was, you know, in the house and she, you know, still loved the house. And if you believe in that, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if she was in the house.
Yes, I wouldn't either.
The house was her baby.
Yeah. I loved her bathtub. Know, I loved that was so oh, nice.
The house is just like the ultimate 1950s kitsch. It's
really
amazing. She has, you know, 6-inch wall-to-wall shag carpet.
Oh, my God. I remember her walking with one of the reporters, and he has to take mm-hmm. off his shoes. And then he asks her, well, who does this on the floor? Oh, my butler. And I'm like, oh, my God, yeah, he loves it, I'm sure. He loves fixing every footstep.
uh-huh.
But that was funny. So
that's definitely Jane.
Your new book will be coming out when? When do you think it'll
be
released?
It will come out. I'm planning on June 29th of this year. So it's Jane's death anniversary. It'll be 52 years since she died. And I think, you know, it should be a good fit for releasing that book because, of course, that book covers her death.
Yes. Well, I'm looking forward to reading that as well because I think, you know, that's a huge part of Jane's life that time. And I will certainly buy it. And I can tell you guys, Publicity is a very good book. You're very thorough and the pictures are great. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff we don't talk about, but, you know, we try to get through little bits here, there, and everywhere. And I want to thank John O'Dowd for introducing me to April because I wouldn't have known about Publicity or April if it wasn't for John. And April, you're fabulous. And I hope when the book gets released, you'll come on again and we'll talk about your new book.
Oh, most definitely, Grace. I really look forward to it. And thank you so much for having me. You've been amazing.
Well, you're pretty swell yourself. So I want to thank April. Say it for me, please.
VVA.
I'm so sorry. I have these horrible brain things.
You're fine.
I'm so horrible. Okay, I'm going to cut this out. Let me do it all over again. Okay, and I want to thank April LaVivier. Is that it?
No, it's just VVA.
VVA. Oh, God,
yeah,
help me.
There you go.
April, I'm so sorry. I told you I've been a wreck all day. Okay.
You're fine.
Okay, but we'll do this. I'll get it. The book is Publicity. It's fabulous. I would recommend it. She's going to come out with another one. And I just love you, April Vivier. You are fabulous.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Grace. If I can channel a little bit of Jane in my life, I'm doing well.
Oh, Davoon. Davoon. Okay, so thank you so much, April. And please come back when your second book comes out. We'll say hey again, okay?
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Grace. I look forward to it. And again, thank you so much for having me.
You are a pleasure. Thank you for coming on. Take care. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Bye.
Can't help it, the girl can't help it. She can't help it, the girl can't help it. If she walks by, the men folks get in rows. Can't help it, the girl can't help it. If she winks an eye, the bread slice turn to toes. Can't help it, the girl can't help it. If she got a lot of what they call the mold. Can't help it, the girl can't help it. The girl can't help it, she was born to please. Can't help it, the girl can't help it. And if she's got a bigger maid, girl can't help it. Won't you kindly be aware? The girl can't help it. Girl can't help it. If she mesmerizes every mother's soul. Can't help it. Girl can't help it. If she smiles and beefsteak become well done. Can't help it. Girl can't help it. She make grandpa feel like 21. Can't help it. The girl can't help it. The girl can't help it. She was born to please. Can't help it. The girl
what they call the